Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, it's the most shoplifted food in the world.
It's one of the 300 flavours of Kit Kat available in Japan.
And it was the name given to 9 British babies in 2013.
It's cheese. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Malu.
Hello. We're also joined by food writer and chef Rosie.
Hi.
It's a pretty strong whiff from the table today.
Yeah. This is a pungent episode, isn't it?
I'm so glad we decided to do this episode midsummer.
Are you guys turophiles?
Oh, what does that mean?
It means a cheese lover.
I am 100%.
Mm-hmm.
About half the cheese we eat in Britain is cheddar. Mm-hmm. We eat 9 kilos of cheese a year. Oh. I'm surprised it's that low. I thought it would be 80% or something.
Really?
Yeah.
My husband has this real thing. His like favorite cheese to eat is slightly below average standard cheddar that's okay. been in the fridge in an open packet for like 15 days. And it gets that like dry, darker bit white. On the edge. That's his like, he's like, that for me is perfect. And I'm just like, you could just buy like a really nice aged cheddar.
Yeah,
that's actually the same thing, kind of.
No, no, but he's cutting out, he's saving money by aging himself.
Then it starts to taste of the fridge. It's such a specific flavor.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. The fridge taste is not for me.
Oh, wow.
No.
The fridge taste, it's like a homeopathic amalgamation of all you eat in a week.
Save it for the fridge episode.
Yeah, we should. So what is cheese?
So it's basically milk that you add normally a rennet to, and then that separates the milk into curds and whey. Mm-hmm. So curds are the kind of like solidified, congealed milk proteins that are made from casein. And then the whey is all the kind of like watery byproducts. So there's a lot of milk sugars. There's also a lot of protein in that as well. So there's actually quite a lot of goodness in the whey.
And yet we throw it away.
Exact wastage.
Wastage. I was looking into Greek yogurt. I know it's slightly off topic, but that involves a lot of whey reduction. And they're kind of trying to think about ways.
Once you start, you just can't stop.
Methods of saving the waste.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can feed it to animals, basically. Mm-hmm. If you distill it and then you get it into more of a sludge, you can sort of mix it into grains and give it a good protein source.
Isn't it also used in whey protein is a popular protein powder.
Bodybuilders love it.
You can also turn it into alcohol.
Can you?
Uh-huh. There's a type of milk vodka you can buy in the UK which uses whey and it distills that.
Clever.
I know.
Very cool. Is it, I mean, I can't try it right now, but I'd love to try it.
Apparently,
do get in touch.
Yeah, apparently it's really
milky
good.
Milky vodka people.
Very smooth. There's also a milk alcohol drink called Bland, which
wait, is that an English company?
I mean, it's like an old drink. So they used to have it in like Scandinavia and Scotland and stuff. But yeah, that's made by fermenting whey as well.
Goodness,
Kind of like a whey wine, whey cider.
And so milk is an emulsion. Mm-hmm. You add this rennet, it breaks the emulsion and it separates the curds and the whey. Mm-hmm. What is rennet?
So rennet is a collection of enzymes that are found in a cow's stomach or a ruminant stomach. So it's not specifically cows, can be like goats or sheep. And that in young ruminants breaks down milk in a very similar process. Mm-hmm. So that's actually how historians think we discovered cheese.
Oh, what, in the stomach of a young cow?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, so they like killed it, ripped open their stomach, and they're like, whoa, this looks delicious. We should eat this.
There's a famous pasta dish called paiata in Rome, where basically you eat a pasta sauce made from milk-fed veal's intestines, and inside the intestine is a fresh ricotta, because it's coagulated inside the intestine of the veal.
And that is why you often see vegetarian cheeses, because most cheeses aren't vegetarian, right?
Yeah.
Oh, because...
because they are. Yeah. Oh.
Controversially, though, I would say I have met very few vegetarians who don't eat...
this is true, yeah.
...meat rennet-based cheeses, like...
But you can't really get rennet without killing an animal,
But they must have an artificial rennet to make vegetarian cheese.
They do, yeah.
What's your favourite cheese?
Parmesan. Parmigiano Reggiano.
That was so quick.
And the funny thing is that it's more because it's because I cook with it. I think there's two types of cheeses. There's eating cheeses and there's cooking cheeses.
Yeah, agreed.
My preference when I'm eating a cheese is something that's quite unusual, artisanal. They're not supposed to be melted into something, whereas there are cheeses that work better as a sort of functional ingredient in a recipe.
Of course, yeah.
Parmesan, for me, is one of those.
I've moved since, but my local Waitrose famously had a Parmesan cabinet of Parmesan.
Ooh. Did it?
And apparently it sold 17% of all Waitrose's Parmesan.
I need to go to this Waitrose.
It's in West Hampstead, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The classic overheard in Waitrose is, darling, do we have Parmesan in both the houses?
Yeah.
Okay, it's time for our first lunchbox, and this week, that's mine. I have brought a selection of cheeses ranging from soft to semi-hard to hard.
We're both laughing at semi-hard.
And I've got one which I will show you now, which is the hardest cheese in the world.
Ooh.
And it comes from Nepal, and it's called Chirpy.
It kind of looks like fudge, but it also looks like it could be plastic.
Mm.
Yes, I'll drop some into the bowl near the microphone. So you can hear how hard it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Almost as hard as rocks. This stuff is a product of Nepal, and it's a traditional dish because... in Nepal, there's not much space to grow vegetables. The soil is pretty sparse. So what they do grow very well is yaks.
Mm-hmm.
And yaks have to be above 4,000 meters or around 4,000 meters altitude. And at 4,000 meters altitude, they eat a special grass, which is called buggy.
Oh.
B-U-G-G-I. And that makes extremely thick milk.
Mm-hmm.
So then what they do when they're making Chirpy actually comes from a yak cow hybrid, but they churn the milk, get the curds in the whey, like we said, and then they press it under big stones to get all the moisture out that they can, and then they start fermenting it and smoke it. The whole process takes weeks and months.
I was gonna say, it looks like the outside of a smoked cheese.
You're probably getting whiffs of smoke. Anyway, shepherds use this to sustain themselves in the long winter months. So they'll chew it for basically 2 hours.
Oh,
it's like bubble gum.
Like a cheese gobstopper.
Like a cheese gobstopper, yeah. And typically, traditionally, they would only sort of make this. They take off the cream during the process and make butter. And it's very high in protein, very low in fat. And basically, you chew it like bubble gum while you're sort of herding your yaks.
And is it purposefully dry as possible, sort of hard as possible, because then it survives longer at those temperatures?
Yes. It's only possible because this buggy that the yaks eat is such a rich in protein milk.
Right.
And supposedly it can last up to 20 years
Whoa.
Before it goes off.
How don't old? Let the protein boys find out about this buggy and this chirpy. So I'll be putting it in smoothies next minute.
You can't blitz that though.
Yeah, that's
grate
true.
It. You can shave it like the Himalayan salt.
Do you want to try some?
Will my teeth be okay?
It's rock hard.
It's rock hard.
Whoa.
It's like a gobstopper, like you say.
Smoky. It's quite mellow.
It's quite mellow. Mm.
I don't think I've ever had a food where I'm like, I don't know how to eat this or what to do with it.
It's also because they've cut it into square pieces. It's quite sharp.
Well, I'm glad you all tried it.
I love being able to try things like this that I would never, ever have even known about, let alone been able to try. So thank you, Jack, for sourcing that. I dread to think how much the air freight was.
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you've all tried it before I tell you that it's being sold in America as dog chews.
That checks out.
That's cool.
So some Nepalese immigrants to the USA realized about 20 years ago that their friend's dog absolutely loved Chirpy and was able to chew on it for, like we say, up to 2 hours. And so they started marketing it as a sort of organic, less processed, almost naturally occurring dog chew. And the Nepalese farmers have embraced this and they can earn 6 times as much as the annual median income in Nepal. But just by selling Chirpy to, you know, wealthy Americans who want to feed their dogs something a bit more natural.
Wow.
That's so cool.
So do they sell it in more of like a stick form?
Yes, they're not so cubular.
Yeah, because it would be bad for the dog. The dog would just swallow that and then have a really tough poo.
I was going to say, is it good for your teeth? Like, you know how when you chew gum, it can help with cavities and stuff. And dog chews are good for their teeth too.
Yeah, it so certainly gets the saliva going. I think if you bit too hard, then you'd crack your teeth. But
Yeah,
Chirpy. Anyway, that's an example of the hardest cheese in the world, like I say, a very hard cheese. I've also brought a selection of cheeses ranging from one of the softest, mozzarella in front of me, which has a shelf life of about a week once you open the packet. And then we've got a Roquefort, which is also quite soft.
Funky.
And it's very funky. It's blue, for those who don't know. It's known as the king of cheeses in France. And it's the earliest form of AOP. In France, the AOP stands for Appellation d'Origine Protégée. So it's basically protected. You can only call it Roquefort if it's made in a specific area, in a specific method, with milk from the ewes of the Lucan sheep.
Oh, it's a sheep.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Sheep's cheese.
Which I think gives it that extra, I like sheep's cheese.
So it's not made in a rock. I thought it was made in like a cave. That was the thing.
No, it is. It's made.
Good.
It's fermented in a specific cave around the village of Roquefort-sur-Soulzon. Which is a small, it's only got 500 inhabitants. But this specific cave has a very specific fungal strain. It's Penicillin Roqueforti. So named after the village. And it's a fascinating example of the ultimate terroir, because this penicillin fungus was only found in this cave. And you can now replicate it in a lab. And if you put that into your cheese, you can still sell it, but it can't be called Roquefort.
And it's very delicious, and it is a cool name.
Yeah. And the mythology behind it, supposedly there was a shepherd, and this doesn't sound very true, and he was eating his bread and cheese one day, and then he saw a beautiful maiden, and he dropped his lunch and chased after her to try and get to know her.
It feels like there's always something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very French story. And then when he came back, and his cheese had turned magically into Roquefort. But I think that's a bit skeptical.
How long was he gone?
Well, that's the thing. It's a minimum of 3 months. To age, sometimes up to a year.
Well, maybe she just took a lot of convincing.
Well, maybe they just got married and had a kid, and then he was like, hang on a sec, I left some bread and cheese up in that cave.
Wow.
Let me go and check on it. But it's certainly got a long history. Charlemagne, medieval king of the Holy Roman Empire, and he loved Roquefort.
I love Roquefort. Me and Charlemagne have that in common.
And Roquefort, in fact, penicillin inside it, it doesn't create penicillin, the drug, but it does have anti-inflammatory properties and is known to prevent the spread of chlamydia.
Oh,
well,
useful.
I'm not sure on the application of it. I think you could probably just eat it, but
yeah.
Yeah. I still wear protection, I would say.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's an example of both soft and blue cheese.
Mm.
And then you move into the semi-hards.
Stop.
Cheddar is probably the most famous semi-hard, and so is Comté, Gruyère.
Oh.
This one I bought is Lancashire, which is a bit crumblier and also quite underrated because it's not particularly punchy. I think it's quite a mild flavour. Mm. Back in the early 20th century, Cheshire and Lancashire cheese were so widely eaten, in fact, probably more so than cheddar, and they've just died away because I think people want consistency, they want a strong flavour. Cheddar's just overtaken, and yeah, Lancashire and Cheshire cheesemakers are dying. When we think of cheeses, I think a lot of people imagine the French are the masters, and they've got the most potentially because of the famous Charles de Gaulle quote about, "How can you govern a country which has 246 varieties of cheese?" Which is actually...
What, as in, like, it's too hard, or is it, it's too easy?
As in, they're all fighting over, like, the best cheese. Like, they can't agree on anything.
Right, yeah, okay.
I think is what he was implying. But since the 1970s, France has lost about 50 varieties of cheese, so that number may well be lower. And actually, it doesn't really compete with countries like Britain. Apparently, we have 700 named cheeses.
Let's go!
So
I knew it.
And even Italy has 400. So I think France's reputation precedes itself. Although you may think they make the best cheese, you know, quality, not quantity.
So something I've always wondered since childhood, since I used to eat it from the fridge in slices.
Yeah.
Why is Swiss cheese holy? It's not a mouse. I know it's not.
It's not mice. Although back in the day, people did think it was mice. No, it's actually part of the cheese making process. So scientists used to think it was bacteria in the cheese as it was maturing. So they thought it was a specific kind of bacteria that released carbon dioxide in the cheese and made these little pockets of gas. But they've recently found out it's not that at all. It's actually tiny specks of dirt in the cheese, and as it matures, it's kind of the opposite. Like, the bacteria and all of the microbes in the cheese are like, oh, don't know, we don't want to be around this bit of dirt, so they kind of like shy away from it, and that's what's forming the holes.
Right. Wow. But you can't see the dirt in the holes.
No, I think it's
thankfully
it's microscopic, and it probably gets washed away during the process as well.
Yeah.
After the holes have been formed.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like, you know, the kind of dirt in the champagne glass that gives you those bubbles.
Like a nucleation site.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I see. Oh, okay. Well, that's definitely not what I thought.
Interestingly, since the process has been getting cleaner, the holes have been getting less and less frequent, so Swiss cheese is getting less holy. So now they have to sort of artificially add it so that we get what we expect, because it is exactly what we expect. Like, the cheese emoji is a holy one.
Yeah.
And in Tom and Jerry, if
the archetypal cheese that we think looks like cheese. Like, if a kid said, draw some cheese, you'd draw a holy like wedge of cheese, wouldn't you?
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Okay, it's time for our second lunchbox, and this week that comes from Rosie.
It does. And I decided to go fairly basic this week, and I just brought you guys a cheese toasty.
Well, sometimes the simplest are the best.
Yeah, but I did want to talk about a specific topic that is, you know, partly something that I know a lot about because I have to do it in my job as a food stylist and a home economist, but also because it's seemingly become this quite like prolific, important thing in people's minds because of social media.
Okay.
And that is the cheese pull.
Mm. Oh, so, that famous Olympic event. The cheese, early Olympics.
One of the most evocative moments in food porn, as it were. Mm. It's a nice stringy cheese pull. So the cheese pull is that thing where you pick up a piece of pizza and there's all that stringy cheese keeping it sort of half attached to the base of the pizza. It's just that really stringy, melty, gooey, ooey, cheesy thing. And I think it's particularly appealing to the sort of the inner child.
Because... or our sort of basic instincts. I've seen someone else describing the sort of more generalized protein ooze, because sometimes you see it with eggs if you're dipping a soldier,
totally,
or like ice cream sort of dripping over the edge slightly.
It's just a very sensual moment. Viscosity. We like viscosity. As a food stylist, a cheese pull is something that I'm asked to replicate a lot. Cheese pull requires a specific kind of cheese. You won't be able to get a cheese pull with every cheese. So a cheese that melts into ooey gooey stringy pulls.
Is that a technical term?
Ooey gooey stringy pulls, in the dictionary down as cheese pull, is typically a high fat, high moisture cheese with a neutral pH. So it's not a very acidic, sharp cheese. Typically, it's also young, because the older a cheese is, the more protein breaks down. And when you are a young cheese, you will have nice long protein strands. So this is why some cheeses melt well, but don't actually pull. For example, cheddar.
Try pulling Chirpy.
I think the most commonly accepted best cheese for pulling,
mozzarella.
Yeah, la mozzarella. Yeah. But this is where I want to caveat that a high moisture cheese is good.
Okay.
Because it's actually that you want a lower moisture mozzarella on the spectrum of moisture. So you want a mozzarella, you want a high moisture cheese, but you want your mozzarella to actually be on the lower end of moisture.
So mozzarella is already quite moist.
You will often see it described, certainly in my recipes, as cooking mozzarella. Is what I mean by a mozzarella that has low moisture.
I saw that when I was first trying to make pizza, I put the wet mozzarella on and it was just a bit pathetic. And then I read that you actually need the slightly cheaper, more processed, harder mozzarella.
A highly processed cheese is actually preferable. Because
presumably they're processing it in order to get a cheese pull sometimes, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did you actually know something I learned when I was researching this is that they make cheese strings by making like a normal high moisture cheese similar to cooking mozzarella, but then they push it through an extruder, like a pasta extruder.
Oh, wow.
And that's what lines up all those really long protein strands. And of course, when you eat a cheese string, what you do is you pull down strings off the cheese, and those are literally the proteins. Like they've fixed it so that they are perfectly aligned, cheese stringable.
Parallel.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
it's amazing that there's so much research and development, I suppose, into making the perfect cheese pull, because it's worth so much to the industry. It just triggers our basic instincts and makes us want to, you know, buy pizzas and...
Like it will be written on call sheets for shoots. Like cheese pull will be part of the scenes for the day if you have a cheese pull in whatever product you're shooting,
because it's also quite time limited, I gather, right?
Well, that's it. So cheese pulls rely on a few other things, not just what cheese you're using. And to be clear, there are a couple of other cheeses that pull well. For example, in this toasty, I've actually used three cheeses. I've used a Turkish mozzarella, which is also used in a very famous Arab and Turkish dessert called, in Turkish, künefe, and Arabic, knafe. When I'm doing food styling shoots, for example, and I've got a cheese pull on my call sheet, I will literally come to Dalston to buy Turkish cheese because I know it's the best one. I've used that, and I've used Red Leicester, which isn't as good a puller, but it does work. And I just really like the colour and the flavour of Red Leicester. It's better than cheddar at pulling, but it's not as good as mozzarella. And I've also used Emmental.
Oh, I love it.
The famous Swiss cheese.
The holy one.
Nice. Nice long protein showers. And importantly, I've used slices, not grated. Okay. When you grate cheese, you obviously are breaking the protein strands. That's obviously going to be a problem. But also, typically, if you're buying pre-grated cheeses, they coat the grates in emulsifiers that stop them from sticking together in the pack. But that inhibits effective cheese pulls in your actual cooking.
Mm.
So the other things that cheese pulls need is a certain temperature level.
Mm-hmm.
It will not pull if it's too cold. You can already see that this is now
That's not too sexy. Cool.
Oh, it's kind
it's
of
just breaking.
Gelatinized.
Yeah.
Also, the rush when you were making this, like you didn't see guys at home. Everyone was like, "Okay, take your places. We got a cheese pool in 5, 4." It was so time pressured.
You have a very specific window, so you really want to aim for around 60 degrees Celsius. If I'm doing it for camera, I will always have a thermometer checking the inside, just to be like, okay, now I know we're at a perfect place and I've got X amount of seconds to sort of, you know, play with this.
Mm.
The other thing is that if it's cooled, reheated, it won't re-pull.
Oh.
The protein strands are done. They can't reform.
This really is like the money shot.
It is. Yeah. And the other thing is other ingredients. So this is a very simple recipe. All I've done is use brioche because I really like brioche for cheese toasties. Try it if you don't believe me. I've mayonnaised the outside.
Oh, classic Rosie.
We should probably save it for the mayonnaise episode. But personally, I prefer a mayonnaise exterior to my cheese toasties because it's easier to coat and it gets a really nice,
the crunch,
crispy exterior and good flavor. I think mayonnaise tastes great when it's cooked in a pan. But there's nothing else in here. There's no other kind of acidic ingredients, for example, or high alkali ingredients. For example, tomato. Like if I put tomato or pickle or something, that would play with the pH of the cheese.
Mm.
And that would mean that it might not pull as well. There's a rumor that we mix cheese with glue to get the best repeatable. Did try and look it up and I couldn't really see a yes or no, but either way, I've never used it.
I'm sure they have.
What you do is, you know, to be really honest, when you buy, let's say you're doing a pizza shoot, you've got a frozen pizza product in front of you. You basically take all the toppings off and remake it.
Mm.
Okay.
And you add your cheese in a sort of strategic lattice so that you know exactly where your pulls are going to come from when you lift up that slice.
Yeah, so cool.
You also have to fix the rest of the pizza to the plate
so
that when you lift up your slice, it doesn't come with it.
Too strong. Yeah,
maybe that's where the glue myth is coming in. What are you sticking it with?
Oh, you can just like blue tack it.
Drawing pens.
But like, so it's funny. Let me be clear, none of this is edible. Like,
no,
you never ever touch or eat any of the food on a product shoot because it's usually like raw and fingered heavily by several different people.
Wow.
Did you know that in 2023, Doritos set the world record for the longest cheese pull?
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that question. You know?
I love it from Doritos. Very well done, Doritos. They used a helicopter. They used a helicopter to dunk a 1.2 meter wide nacho into a blend of 120 kilos of mozzarella and cheddar, actually.
Wow.
And then they pulled the cheese out and the team managed to get it to stretch 15 meters into the air.
That's amazing.
I wish I'd been there. There's another fact I found that I really liked, which is that have you ever heard the rumor that cheese can give you nightmares?
Yeah.
That is because there is a product in cheese called tyramine. And tyramine is an amino caused by the breakdown of the amino acid tyrosine. And this is what causes your terrors. And tyramine is a key part of why some foods taste sharp. So your sharper cheeses, your cheddars, your Stiltons, your Parmesans, they all have loads of tyramine in. But stretchy cheeses like mozzarella don't have that much. Because they are notoriously much milder and sweeter. So if you were thinking, oh no, I'm going to have had a hard night of cheese nightmares after eating that toasty. Wrong. You'll be fine.
So that's a little life hack. If you're plagued by nightmares, just have stretchy cheese.
So that's the liquid end of the cheese spectrum, the gooey cheese pull end of the spectrum. And now I want to talk about the other end completely, the hard end, the Parmesan end specifically. and grating Parmesan. Mm. So it's maybe something you wouldn't have thought about before, but actually how you grate your Parmesan will affect the flavor of the Parmesan on the dish.
Mm.
So you might have one of two, or maybe both, things at home with which you grate cheese. One of them being this very nice box grater, metal grater with a few different edges, all giving you a slightly different texture of cheese, some sort of coarser grates, some finer grates.
It's a cuboid.
Then you would have what is called a microplane handheld grater.
Paddle shaped
is a really good, thank you very much, Jack. I was struggling to describe that. Usually quite fine. They're very sharp. And I very often will use that for grating my cheese onto my pasta, specifically Parmesan. I don't know if you've ever been to Italy, and have you noticed that most restaurants, actually, the cheese is already grated for you. They don't actually do that much grating at the table. I think that's more than anything a practical thing, a kind of like, it's just not, you know, they've got that giant pepper grinder they're going around with already. Like,
they can't carry
both. Time to do with the Parmesan as well. They need to do the pepper.
They need to,
And I think that's a generosity thing here.
Oh,
not even a practicality thing. I think it's because people are cheap and they want to control how much Parmesan you get.
I see. Say when.
Well, and it's also much more expensive here. Let's be honest, for restaurants, Parmesan is quite a big expense. And if you're giving it for free, you need to have built that cost into whatever plate you're doing. And sometimes that's really hard to translate to the customer. Yeah. Anyway, all power to restaurants. I'm not slagging you off. So, great food writer Daniel Gritzer wrote a piece for Serious Eats, the website, about what is the best way to grate Parmesan, using blind taste testers to compare specifically the flavor, the aroma, and its ability to emulsify.
Okay.
And he came to the conclusion that it is actually on the old box grater, on the star setting.
I've always wondered.
I.e. the finest, most annoying one, the one that's most likely to clean, to shred your knuckles.
So just to be clear, it's the one that's
a star.
It goes both ways.
Yeah.
Whereas most of them, you can only shred the cheese going down.
Yes, exactly. It kind of creates almost like a powdery texture with your Parmesan. His results confirm that basically finely grated on the box grater on that star setting yields the most flavorful results, because you are creating the most surface area from which to get those delicious umami proteins
coat
through
your mouth.
The way that the cheese reacts with heat is different depending on how it's been grated. So for a cheese forward sauce, for example, cacio pepe, you would always want to use this side, because if you shave the flakes with microplane, the sort of shards, they're way more likely to clump in the heat and become claggy when you try and emulsify them with pasta and pasta water and stuff. Whereas the finer pieces will not, because they have shorter protein strands. So if you're ever trying to make carbonara or cacio pepe or something, you know, needs a bit of a cheese emulsification, go right fine. Go really fine with that cheese.
I wonder if there's a technology to make it even finer. Could you like push it through, like an aerosol?
Or like
aerosoled pecorino would make the best ketchup.
It still needs to be a solid that melts into a liquid, doesn't it?
Could you put it in a blender?
You can, and we would do that. Well, specifically, you'd have an attachment for your blender that's kind of like that. Mm. So you just hold the cheese and it would just, you know, do it for you.
That's so
cool. For large scale.
I like those automatic pencil sharpeners. But with cheese.
A cheese string.
What you grate with also has a bearing on the volume.
I find that as soon as I switch to my microplane, it will look like you're putting way too much cheese on. But because it's got such volume and surface area, it actually weighs a lot less.
We should say, they did start out making paper.
I think we mentioned on one of the early episodes. They were laser etching for printer parts.
Oh, cool.
And then they kept getting people bleeding fingers. And then they ran out of plasters and they were like, well, can't we use this? Like, they don't need to be that sharp. Like, can't we use the sharpness as a functionality? And then they switched to cheese graters.
And I think we said as well, now they make foot files too.
They do, because I've used them.
Are they good?
Well, they've been used upon me.
Oh.
By people in the pedicurist.
And which face of your box grater do you use on your foot?
I think we need to use all three for me. All four.
The biggest grate. Boy. Yeah. That's just out the bowl.
That's for like a school cheddar cheese sandwich where they also did it to the butter. So you can't tell what's butter and what's cheddar. The coarse side.
Yeah.
Big holes.
If you see the words coarsely grated in a recipe, this is what we mean. Mm-hmm. This is the thickest, coarsest grate. This is what you would use for potato or onion.
Yeah, or courgette.
As well as cheese, courgette, like any vegetable that you might want to grate, carrot for like coleslaw or something.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, cheddar or something that can hold up to being a coarse grate.
Yeah, good stuff.
Great. So one of my favorite facts about Parmesan that has absolutely no bearing on eating it is that actually there is a bank in Italy that accepts wills of Parmesan as collateral for loans.
No way.
In Emilia Romagna, which is where Parmesan is made.
Okay.
There is a bank called Credito Emiliano, known colloquially as Credem. Most of the time when we think of like loan collateral, we think of something like the mortgage, you know, something like that. But basically in 1953, Credem saw an opportunity to help out the Parmesan makers, the farmers who were creating this cheese that actually takes a really long time to make. So an average Parmesan wheel can go from anywhere between £1,000 to £2,500-£3,000.
Wow.
Whoa. They're big, right? I mean, I don't know if people can picture them at home. They're like a car tire. Yeah, exactly.
The other problem with them is that it takes so long to make. Parmesan can't even be classified as Parmesan by the Parmesan Consortium, the Parmigiano Reggiano Consortium, until it is a year old.
Got it.
That is when they check if it's good enough to be Parmesan.
Okay.
Then they will stamp it and then they will be like, okay, you've got another 6 months or 8 months or 12 months or, you know, the most expensive ones you'll find are like 36 months. And the ones that we buy the most in the UK tend to be around the 18-month mark.
Okay,
So if you think about it, these poor farmers have made massively expensive cheese and they have no money to show for it for almost 2 years sometimes. So this bank decided to start accepting the wheels of Parmesan as collateral on loans to the farmers because
I see. So if you can't pay back your loan, they'll take your Parmesan.
Yeah, they've got them in the bank. Yeah. They have their own Parmesan vaults. Temperature controlled.
I was gonna say it must be really specific.
Yeah. So basically Credem will give loans of up to 70% or 80% on a wheel of Parmesan.
Whoa.
And it still happens today. And this is actually not the only instance of unusual loan collateral that has happened. Before Prohibition, banks in the United States accepted whiskey as collateral.
Also long-lasting and expensive.
Yeah. And in 2013, it was reported that a bank in Hong Kong was accepting designer bags. And then probably the weirdest example is that a bank in Spain sought a loan from the European Central Bank and wanted to offer Cristiano Ronaldo and Kaká, the football player, as collateral.
Wow, neither of whom are Spanish, but I guess they play for a Spanish club.
Yeah, I think they were playing for Madrid at the time.
I did not know that was a legal thing you could do.
Well, I don't think it was legal at all. No. I think they were quite clearly no.
You don't know unless you ask.
No, I mean, Parmesan wheels are valuable. Samuel Pepys wrote in his diary about burying his Parmesan before the Great Fire of London.
Really?
To keep it from melting.
Samuel Pepys had a Parmesan? What an absolute baller.
I don't think he had a whole wheel, but he certainly had some, which he stashed away and he was very proud.
So, yeah, I would. That's maybe the first thing that comes out with me in the fire, not my engagement ring. Whatever cheese I've got in the fridge. No, I'm joking. I love you, Tom.
But a lot of people in the 17th century would have had cheese that lasts a long time because they didn't have refrigeration and basically add flavour to what was quite a bland time to be eating, certainly in England.
It was a bland time. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, cheese is effectively, when you eat Parmesan like I do, I use it as a seasoning. It's how I season my food.
And it's kind of already off, like it only gets more tasty as it ages.
So good.
Exactly.
I found a little story I think you'll like, Rosie. By the 14th century writer Giovanni Boccaccio. So he wrote a collection of short stories called The Decameron, which was actually made into a Netflix series recently about a type of heaven with a Parmesan mountain It sounds so good.
Say less. So he's like, I would like to go.
In the land of the Basques, there's a district called Bengodi, where they bind the vines with sausages, and there's like goose everywhere. And then there's the mountain of grated Parmesan cheese.
That's grated.
It's grated. And on it dwell folk that do naught else but make macaroni and ravioli. And so they boil them. And then they just like float down the mountain on the pasta. Luge. Exactly.
Oh my God.
Going back to, you know, we were talking about the size of the Parmesan wheel being like a car tire.
Yeah.
There was a race in Italy, I think it was in the 70s or 80s, where people were using Parmesan wheels as car tires.
Oh,
it was so cool. So like all of these tiny Italian cars just like bombing it on cheese wheels.
But you, I mean, you can use certainly hard cheese. There's a bit of a hard to pin down story in the 1800s that Uruguay was at war with either Brazil or Argentina, sources vary. And supposedly the Uruguayan warship ran out of cannonballs. And then they started using balls of edam that they had lying around. And it was actually done on Mythbusters. And they proved that you could make a hole in a sail by firing a ball of edam.
If they got some of that chirpy.
Yeah, they should have done
that. That would take your eye out for sure.
Hey there. Are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Okay, it's time for lunchbox number 3, our final lunchbox, and that comes from Malu.
Today, I have brought an activity for us.
Yay!
It's time to cut the cheese.
Okay.
Oh, did you know that in American slang, cutting the cheese means farting?
I did know that already. We are going to read our futures with cheese.
Ooh. Oh, great.
So this is a form of divination that's called tyromancy. Mm-hmm. Like we said, tyro, tyros, the Greek for cheese.
Yeah.
We can either read the patterns on the blue cheese in front of us.
Okay.
Or we can give one of the harder cheeses a little chop and then read the patterns in that broken up bit.
Ooh, can we do both?
Yeah, of course. The influence you have on the cheese, according to world famous cheese diviner Jennifer Billock, who are honestly, she is the only cheese diviner I know about. But she says your influence on the cheese is the choosing of the cheese. So if you pick one of the cheeses, that will be your cheese. We're not going to use the same cheese for Rosie.
Okay, cool.
And then we can read that one and that will be your influence on the cheese. So what do you want to pick?
I'm going to go for the blue, the Roquefort.
What shapes do we see? I see a dog. It's got two little ears here and then a little head.
Okay.
Then a little body. So
does that represent fidelity or something?
Apparently it represents companionship.
True.
So you have friends, Jack. Yeah.
And you just had a baby.
Oh,
this
a new companion.
Well, apparently, if you see a baby in the cheese, that means big change is coming.
Okay.
Mm. If you see an arrow or a line, that represents a journey. And if it's broken, something will disrupt your journey. And then a smiley face, surprisingly, is happiness. Anyway,
I never have guessed.
So there's also like ways you can count the holes and stuff. So Rosie, do you want to give one of the cheeses a chop and we can do some number?
Sure.
Number.
I'll go
divination.
For the Lancashire. I'm supposed to chop it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Checking
give it a chop.
The right thing.
Okay. So wait. It's broken into two.
Oh God.
So.
Why do I feel like that's
according
bad?
To the principles of numerology, which is basically mystical relationships between numbers and the universe and all this stuff, two is you have a two-way personality and can sway between extremes.
It's bipolar disorder.
You love hard and you hate hard. You also, I have in my notes, you like dark medieval art and unicorns. Is this true?
You just essentially just got to call me two-faced on our podcast.
Yeah.
I would say, depending on the hormones in my body, I can swing from side to side a bit.
I think Rosie loves semi-hard.
So this is obviously not an exact science or a science at all. But people have been practicing tyromancy for a really long time. We're not sure exactly when it started, but our best guess is around like the 2nd century. There's a mention by a famous diviner called Artemidorus, who wrote a treatise on divination and the interpretation of dreams. But he also says that cheese dreams, the stuff you can read from your crazy cheese dreams, are also like the most unreliable kind of dream. So you got to take it with a big pinch of salt.
It's the Achilles heel of tyromancy.
Exactly.
That's it, yeah.
Also there's a bit in a 17th century dream manual that says if you dream of cake without cheese, that's a really good thing.
Oh.
But if you dream of cake and cheese, you'll be betrayed by a Welshman. beware of the cake and the cheese.
Welsh cakes often served with cheese.
Oh,
we're playing this thing wide open.
Damn. But what I love is this all blew up again in 2023 because there was a modern witch, someone who practices like tarot and stuff, called Jennifer Billick, who got really into tyromancy. So basically over lockdown, she got super bored and was like, what else can I read? Because she read Tea Leaves and then found this. And now she's like done loads of television interviews. People absolutely love having their cheeses read and she's doing really well out of it.
It just sounds somewhat like saucy. Can I read my cheese?
People have a great time and often like her readings are pretty positive, which is I imagine a really nice thing in lockdown when it's a very uncertain time. But cheese has been linked to witchcraft for a really long time anyway. Historians think about it in terms of like the transformation of milk into curds in whey.
It's kind of magic.
Especially when you're not exactly sure how it's happening. It is such a mystical thing to see like a solid form from nothing. And there's also like a really famous mention of kind of witchcraft and cheese that went viral in 2021, which was like how to win women and their affection. The line is so good. It's you may fascinate a woman by giving her a piece of cheese, which is bang on.
I would say give it a go.
But there's also other forms of food divination. Say, like I mentioned, tea is a really famous one. There's something called alfitomancy, which is cake or bread divination. And back in the day, they used to use this to solve crimes. So they'd feed criminals pieces of bread. And if they were innocent, they would be fine. If they were guilty, they'd have quite severe indigestion.
It's a bit like in ancient medieval China, they would give criminals dry rice to see if they were innocent or guilty.
Mm-hmm. What would happen to the rice?
I think if you were guilty, you'd know you were guilty and you'd be nervous. So you would not have any saliva. And therefore, when they spat it out after a certain amount of time and it was still dry, they were like, he's guilty. Whereas if it was wet, you were just completely cool and innocent, which doesn't actually catch the psychopaths who are just like, no. I'm proud of what I did. Yeah. I'm not nervous.
And also then they just spit out just like a perfect bowl of rice.
Yeah, imagine. Or like a nigiri from salmon they ate earlier.
And then the last one, there's something called gastromancy, which is fortune telling by stomach rumble. So you'd listen to the gurgles in your stomach, and that was supposed to be the voices of the dead.
Wow.
Oh, God.
People think this is also one of the, like, really early forms of ventriloquism. Because people would, like, hold themselves close to the stomach and go, like, blah, blah, blah. But you won't be able to see it.
Interesting.
I know.
Lani, do you want to go?
You know, I will. I'm going to cut this bad boy. Oh, that's, again, two pieces.
So you are also a two-faced slag.
Love.
Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
So Rosie, have you got any cheesy parting recipes to recommend?
Well, it's not a recipe of mine. In fact, it's not a recipe at all. I'm just going to say, look it up, find a recipe of it. But if you haven't tried the extremely cheesy mashed potato dish from France called Aligo, then you should definitely find a recipe for Aligo and make it, because it is really good. It combines two of my favourite things, potatoes and cheese.
And is that spelt with a silent T at the end?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And for those Googling it.
And it's basically like, it's like mashed potato that's almost pullable because it's so cheesy.
Great. That sounds delicious. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Henriot, Rosie McKean, and me, Jack Chambers. It was mixed by Li Ying Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.